17.7 today to the dollar. So some tough times ahead. But listen, let's talk to a woman who knows how to overcome tough times, who knows how to look into the future, plan for it, and get things done. We're talking about Dr. Judy Dlamini. Her name comes up every time the question is asked, who are the wealthiest women of African descent in South Africa? She features on that list. She's appeared on the covers of Forbes Africa, on the power lists of prominent magazines in Africa and in the Middle East. And yet not many people know of her. But when you work in the field of medicine, medical innovation, pharmaceuticals, women in science, she's known, she's lauded, she's respected, she's celebrated. And despite these successes and accolades, she's someone who I think prefers to live her life a little bit privately, focused on the work, and I think less on the celebrity and the glamour of it all. Well, not until 2018, when Wits University knocked on her door and said, would you allow us to nominate, elect, and have you as the Chancellor of Gauteng's most historical and prestigious university. She obliged. And within that role, though non-executive, she's using the platform to really advance a lot of issues around women in science, women in business, and gender parity as a whole. She herself is one half of a power couple. I also know she's a doting mom and I think a grandma too.
Yes.
So people always say, we don't know if you can speak to Dr. Judy at the moment. She's on a trip with her grandchildren or she's babysitting her grandchildren. So that's first and foremost her priority these days. And it's not, and it's quite surprising that, with grandma being her most important role of the day, that she has time for anything else. I think I'm presenting a picture to you who's whole, successful in business, prominent in academia, prominent in the gender lobby space, an acolyte for Black economic empowerment, you know, even if not quite BEE, but for the empowerment of Africans as a whole, a global business leader, a grandmother. She's whole, and she's here to dialogue with us today.
Thanks for that very generous and kind introduction, Lerato. Good morning. Thanks for having me. And good morning to your listeners.
Thank you so much for your time. So I'm going to start off with a title, Equal But Different, Women Leaders, Life Stories. You've shared your life through this book, through these conversations, these dialogues on what it is to overcome race, gender and social class. I mean, a loaded title, but it speaks to all the limitations that women face. Gender, race, and social class. What's your experience with it all?
Actually, it's more attributes than the three, but I chose the three because I actually felt they have the most impact. Equal but different. I believe that. Actually, because I grew up in Westville, and during those days used to have European and non-European, belong to the non-European space, and it didn't come with a lot of privilege, if any. Actually, it was punished. So it does matter the context of where you grow up. It does matter who brings you up, your siblings and everybody else, because the message that I got from my parents was that I can be anything I choose to be. So I believed I was equal. So I had this anger because when I looked at people who are racially different, you know, to me, it didn't make them better. It just made them different. So equal but different is my mantra because we are equal but different.
And so you're speaking to the racial undertones, the polarities. When I saw the title Equal But Different, I thought of it in the gender tones, patriarchy. Men and women are equal but different. What's your view?
Of course, of course. You see, that's why I was saying there are so many attributes of difference. The world we live in put a white man as the top. Like, that's what we should aspire to
be. The apex.
Everything else is trying to be him. If you have one attribute of advantage, perceived advantage, you are a man, you're closer to him. If you are white, you're closer to him. So that's why I'm so big on intersectionality when you do redress.
Yeah.
Because if you only look at race, you will actually benefit a male who's black. Yeah. And if you look at gender, you'll benefit a white woman. So it's very important that when we have so many things to redress in this country because of our history, you are holistic in the approach. Yeah.
And I'm glad you've mentioned intersectionality because it leads beautifully in what I want to ask you. But just using that methodology, you know, and that analogy of the white man being the most privileged individual on planet Earth, actually, and then the different categories, the weakest, the lowest of that pyramid tends to be the African, the poor African woman. It's not even the black woman.
Mm-hmm.
It's a woman born on the African continent with very little access to education, few social goods like water, like electricity, condemned to poverty, boom. That's at the bottom of the list. And even as we speak, as educated, worldly, privileged black African women, we need to recognize where there are privileges, even for us, and that there are people who don't even have a fraction of what it is we are fighting for.
I couldn't agree with you more, Loretta. I'm privileged. I'll say that without any doubt. I live in Sandton, I'm educated, I have access at the seat, at the table, but I'm very aware that there is that rural woman who has no education, who's poor, and that woman relies on me to do something to lift her because I know her pain. I haven't lived it, but I'm close enough to know. So that's what I've done all my life. Wherever I go, I look at the one who's at the bottom of the food chain and say, what do I have and what do I know that will actually assist?
And irrespective of how people may deny it, we don't actually have spatial distance from that vulnerability. That rural woman of poverty, she's probably in your house cleaning it, raising your children. And what you pay her and what opportunities you afford her trickles back to her family in the rural area and slowly but surely can start to change the narrative around her. And yet we keep on being told of these huge divisions as if they're spatial, as if really and truly when you're living in the urban area, you can't possibly empathize with a woman in the rural area, or you can't possibly empathize with somebody who's living in Nairobi or, you know, or Accra. And yet actually we do have that proximity.
Of course, and that's so true. You know, the lady, Mrs. Longwa, who helped me raise my kids for 16 years,
you know,
she was the second mother to my two kids, came from rural KwaZulu-Natal.
Yeah.
And I always say that we can always do something.
Mm.
It's not enough to pay her. It's not enough to do something for her. But for you to break the chain of poverty, you have to do something for her kids.
Oh, wow.
Pay for their education, because education is a liberator, if you can.
Mm.
And even if you haven't got the resources, but because of your privilege, you can direct your domestic helper to actually the right school, and we can always pay something, Loretta.
Yeah.
If not, just take over and assist in terms of education.
Or empowerment in different things, you know, like... you know, she has an abscess. My helper had an abscess on her tooth, you know, and it was either she goes to the community clinic or she goes to my dentist.
Exactly.
And it's just that small intervention. Yeah.
It makes a difference. Every intervention, you can only do what you can with what you have, you know.
Okay, so let's talk about that intersectionality that you've mentioned, because it's such an important concept. It's just the idea, simply put, that says, in basic form, there are men and there are women, there are black people, there are white people, there are young people, there are old people. But when you start to peel the layers like an onion, you realize a man is not just a man. Is he a rural man? Is he a rich man? Is he an elderly man? Is the woman privileged? Is she in Sandton? Is she black and privileged? Is she white and privileged? Because there's a distinction there. How did the black woman become privileged? is she rural and privileged? Because you can be in a rural area and be the owner of the local supermarket, you know, in that rural setting. Be the one who has the water and the electricity where others don't. Mm. And so intersectionality starts to complicate the conversation around South Africa because we experience the system the same, but differently. So we're sitting here with an Eskom power outage. If you've got a generator, load shedding is a different experience to someone who doesn't.
Definitely.
And if you're in Sandton and you don't have a generator, but you've got a schedule, you're experiencing it different to somebody in Pimville who's been without electricity for 6 months because the transformer broke and Eskom is refusing to fix the transformer. And that's actually a true story, Dr. Judy.
I know. That's our reality. And, you know, I think as leaders, we need to be accountable. And because you make decisions, and please make a decision, even if it's a wrong decision. But once you make that decision, own it. And if it's a wrong decision, have the humility to say it was the wrong decision. And as leaders, we are called upon to solve for the weakest in the value chain, you know, because those that are high flyers, they can take care of themselves.
Yeah.
But when we solve for the weakest, it works for everybody else. It's not good that we are the most unequal country in the world.
Yeah.
It's not good that a woman in this country has 5 times chance of being killed than the global average, right? I can go on and on, you know, and the further away you are from privilege, the more likely you are going to be accessible, I mean, accessible to abuse, no privilege. But even those that are privileged, we have a pay gap at the highest echelons, you know. So I think as society, not just in this country, but globally, we need to be alive to the equity that we need to achieve in this lifetime, hopefully.
We'll discuss that equity. I just want you to quickly elaborate. Who's not decisive? Who's not making a decision?
I'm not talking about, you know, one of the things I try not to do and one of the things I do deliberately and consistently is to make the change that I know the country needs and be that agent of that change.
Mm.
Now, if you are sitting with a problem that is as big as energy, that affects everyone. I was listening to one of your callers talking about someone who needs oxygen and there are so many people with chronic COVID.
Yeah.
And then there's no electricity, they die.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a fundamental problem that for how long are we going to say there's sabotage, there's this, there's that? So all I'm saying is that let us be accountable and solve the challenge that you are faced with.
Dr. Judy, you're a better woman than me, more beautiful, smarter, more accomplished. Because if you'd ask me, if I was asked the question I just asked, I'd call it what it is. Cabinet are just talking and the rest of us are just reeling. Power Talk with Dr. Judy Dlamini.
Doing it alone is okay, but doing it sisonke makes it